This is me telling you this. The program is Media Network.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another program from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archive.
Radio Netherlands, Continental Talk Radio.
Back in 1927, Holland started international broadcasting from the Deep South.
This is station PCJ.
The Deep South of Holland, that is. More than 60 years later, we think we've got the formula about right. Small country, big heart. Public radio, direct from Europe.
I'm Jonathan Marks. Welcome to half an hour of scanning across the dial with Media Network. We start high up in frequency by crossing to the phone lines in Hilversum 724-222.
Good day, Jonathan. This is Norman Melrose in London. With some recent scanning of the satellite KU band, here are some new radio stations that I've come across. At 7 degrees east on the Canal Plus channel, there is a Madrid station testing like this.
Este es el canal de transmisión de F Radio, Madrid.
Stereo frequencies are 7.38 and 7.56 megahertz. At 1 degree west on what used to be the Norsat channel, there's a Norwegian station, probably domestic, from Oslo on 7.20 megahertz.
Om et lite øyeblikk blir det dagsnytt i begge kanaler, 15.04 distriktsnyheter, og 15.07 setter vi igjen over til Kjell Edlund i minitimen.
Herre, dagsnytt. Kaos og forvirring preger den irakiske tilbaketrekkingen I Kuwait.
And lastly from Astra on the MTV channel, there is Power FM from Amsterdam on 7.38 and 7.56 megahertz.
Thanks, Norman. In fact, we're planning to visit that radio station in Amsterdam in a couple of weeks' time. It's amazing the satellite info that's coming in at the moment. Right, it says Q drums next here on my script. Wonder what that means.
Now, a look ahead to the summer lineup here on Radio Netherlands English Service.
Most transmissions start with news and newsline, followed by a feature programme that's different each day.
Monday.
Research File, our science and technology magazine, hosted by Anne Blair Gould.
Tuesday.
Arts and music feature weekly in the cultural magazine Images.
Wednesday.
Tune in here for regular documentaries covering subjects from opera to the survival of the African elephant.
Thursday.
Now celebrating 10 years on the wireless, Media Network, our weekly communications magazine. Which brings us to
Friday.
And Sounds Interesting, a new series on the Dutch with Dorothy Weirs.
The Saturday Split.
And depending on where you live, you'll hear Rembrandt Express, Asia Scan or Airtime Africa, weekly magazines dealing with events in Europe and your region of the world.
Sunday.
Traditional family entertainment from Tom Meyer with The Happy Station.
Full details and the free program schedule out now.
Now to the news desk, and joining me is Andy Sennett.
And I've some hot news from the Pacific. Just a few hours ago, I spoke on the telephone with Gordon Darling in Papua New Guinea, and even as I speak, Gordon's on his way from Port Moresby to Rabaul, where he will spend the weekend getting Radio North Solomons back on the air.
Andy, I think you better explain the story for those who haven't been following it. What's the background?
Well, Radio North Solomons is the regional station originally based in Bougainville, but due to a political crisis in that area, it was forced off the air several months ago. Since then, a temporary service has been provided for 20 minutes a day over the regional station in Rabaul, Radio East New Britain.
So does that mean then that there are two separate stations operating from Rabaul?
Exactly. As it happens, Radio East New Britain, which operates on 3385 kHz, recently received a new Japanese-built 10-kilowatt transmitter. The old one, also 10 kilowatts, will now be used for Radio North Solomons on its own frequency of 3325 kHz, 3325. Testing on dummy load starts tomorrow, Friday, and over the weekend antenna tests will be carried out. If all goes well, official programmes will start on Monday.
Right, forget about those dummy load tests, but at the weekend look out for Radio North Solomons on 3325 kHz between 19 and 22 hours, and again between 07 and 14 hours UTC. And this weekend there could be some transmitter tests outside those hours, so it is worth checking.
Now back to the Gulf, and Radio Baghdad has made another shortwave frequency change. 8350.3 kHz has disappeared again, but BBC Monitoring now reports Baghdad's domestic service on 6540 kHz. 6540. Now be careful, because 6540 is also a frequency used by Radio Pyongyang in North Korea. Baghdad's other shortwave frequencies, 3980 and 4600 kHz, are still active. The station no longer mentions Saut al-Jamahir, voice of the masses, in its Arabic identification.
So it's simply Radio Baghdad, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
OK, I keep seeing loggings of Baghdad on several other frequencies too, such as 15600. What's happening there?
Yes, some people obviously missed our programme a few weeks ago when we explained that the opposition station, Voice of Free Iraq, had started to use the same identification announcement as Radio Baghdad. It still does, but adds its own name, Saut al-Iraq al-Hur, on the end. If you hear that phrase, it isn't the real Radio Baghdad. It's still on 17960, 15600, 9995 and 9570 kHz.
Which is all very confusing, of course, if you don't understand Arabic. Let's bring up the line to Richard Meesham, manager of the World Broadcasting Information publication, BBC Monitoring, in Caversham Park, England. We're still on the subject of the Gulf. And let's go for an update now, because what's happened, Richard, to the resistance movements inside Iraq? Obviously, the government-controlled Radio Baghdad doesn't reflect their views. So do they all have their own voice?
Yes, they do indeed. There are, in fact, two principal radios at the moment. One is one that was mentioned fairly recently by Iranian news sources. They kept on talking about a radio station called Voice of Revolutionary Iraq, which they claim was broadcasting from Basra. We've now found this radio station on 7097 kHz, and we make the actual title of the radio out to be Voice of Rebellious Iraq. The radio broadcasts three times a day at 4:30, 12:30 and 17:30 GMT for about 2.5 hours, and the frequency again is 7097. And we believe that it represents the Iraqi rebels in the south. It actually carried a statement by Muhammad Bakir al-Hakim, who's the leader of the Supreme Assembly of the Islamic Revolution in Iraq. And as I said, according to Iranian sources, the radio is emanating from Basra. Now, the other radio represents rebels in the north, to be more precise, the Kurdish rebels, and they are represented by a station called Voice of the People of Kurdistan, which is now a couple of channels, 3960 and 7030 kHz, and it broadcasts most of the day in Kurdish and in Arabic.
That first station that you were talking about, Voice of the Rebellious Iraq, that's operating the 40-metre ham band, isn't it?
Yes, it is indeed, and we attempted here in the UK to listen to the station, and it seems as though some radio amateurs are objecting to this radio in their band and are trying to make it move.
Yeah, about sort of tuning up on top of it and things like that, I guess.
Yes, indeed.
One other thing is that other clandestine news, it was yesterday, Wednesday, we actually lost one radio station.
Yes, another clandestine radio station has disappeared, and this is the one that we called Radio Iran Toilers. It represented the Iranian Two-Day Party and was a radio that operated out of Afghanistan. It used transmitters provided by Radio Afghanistan. And it's now closing down on the eve of the new Iranian New Year. And it's closed down, it says, because of international trends, because of climate in the area, is now meant that it has now done its job. So that radio station is no more as of the 20th of March.
I see. It feels it's done its job.
Yes, it does.
And where's the word toilers? Does that mean it's for the workers?
Yes, toilers, workers. It's just a matter of translation, and monitor experts here consider that the word toilers was a better translation of the Persian word than the word workers.
Right, well, thank you, Richard, for that update. Back to Andy.
Now to the USSR. And our co-editor Olle Alm in Sweden informs us, and this has also been confirmed by BBC Monitoring, that most of the USSR, with some regional exceptions, will not adopt summertime this year. Instead, the clocks will stay the same until the end of September, when they will be put back 1 hour. That will mean standard time in Moscow will be UTC plus 2 hours instead of UTC plus three.
Mystery solved.
Every now and then it's possible to shed light on a mystery from the past. Exactly 20 years ago, this sound was heard emanating from the Meebo 2, a pop music ship anchored in the North Sea.
Radio North Sea, Radio North Sea, Radio North Sea, Radio North Sea.
Postbus 117 Hilversum. Postbus 117 Hilversum.
Dit is Radio Noordzee.
Radio North Sea International will be on the air 20 hours per day with music and entertainment, especially for you on your particular radio. And we'd like to hear from you, especially at this time, we'd like to hear from you concerning our reception.
Actually, Radio North Sea International didn't survive for much longer after that test transmission. By the mid-70s, the ship had gone from the North Sea to a destination somewhere in North Africa, more precisely, Libya. From there, test transmissions were heard on shortwave for several hours a day for some months, although no clue was really given as to the exact location. Maybe you remember this announcement.
To a transmitter test program in the medium wave band at 773 kHz, 388.1 metres, and the 49 metre shortwave band at 605 kHz, 48.35 metres, VHF FM at 90 MHz. We now conclude this test transmission and will recommence broadcast at 1800 hours GMT. We sincerely hope that you've enjoyed the music on this evening's program and will join us again later. So until then, from all of us to all of you, it's a very good night.
I recorded that at a radio camp in Döbriach in southern Austria in August of 1977, according to the cassette label. Jules Retro, who's now sitting opposite me, knows exactly what was going on that ship because he was actually there at the time. Jules.
Yes, I was, Jonathan, from about May of 77 to, I think, about April, so just about 12 months into the following year. The ship actually did not broadcast off the coast of Libya. It was sitting idly at anchor in Tripoli Harbour, very often just simply by the quayside. Your shortwave listeners, of course, would have heard us, I say us, but it's a long time ago now, would have heard us on the 49-metre band, but the ship's big medium-wave AM transmitter, 100 kilowatts, an RCA amplifase affair, almost never got the chance to be fired up because it interfered with the communications of the other ships in Tripoli Harbour.
And in that announcement, I can also hear FM being mentioned too.
Yes, we did have a 1 kilowatt Röden Schwarz FM transmitter, which did its job very nicely, thank you very much. And there were two shortwave transmitters on board. One was a 10-kilowatt affair, very old. I'm trying to think of the other 10-kilowatt transmitter which was also functioning on an almost daily basis.
But why?
Well, the Meebo 2, of course, had a long history before it was in Libya, and to the best of my knowledge, it had been lying idly in Rotterdam Harbour for about 2 years prior to the adventure we're now talking about in Libya. And it was being held in custody by the Dutch telecom authorities because of certain transgressions against the broadcasting law, which was in effect back in those days.
This is the Marine Broadcasting Offences Act, or it's
something similar. Yes, I think the act directed at pirate radio stations, and complete with transmitter crystals, frequency crystals being impounded, etc., etc. Now, the owners of that ship, the Swiss company Meebo International. Can I mention names?
Yeah.
Yes, Herr Bollier and Herr Meister, who, of course, graciously consented to form the name Mebo by me and Bo from Meister and Bollier. That's where the name comes from. They managed to extricate the Mebo 2 from the clutches of the Dutch authorities, and they somehow swung a deal with Libya's Colonel Gaddafi, or at least the people who run his broadcasting organisation, to sell that ship to the PRBC, and that was the People's Revolutionary Broadcasting Corporation. An arrangement was worked out whereby they contracted Herr Bollier and Herr Meister to run the ship on their behalf and crew it with people. The Libyans, as I say, did not have the resources. And they were paid quite handsomely for doing that, for running, staffing the ship, while it was no longer really their property. So it was a nice arrangement all round.
But what did you do? I mean, you were sitting on the ship and what happened?
Well, it is very odd when one thinks about it. We were simply on the ship to keep proving to the Libyans that their investment did in fact work. So we had to be on the air, I think it was a minimum of 5 or 6 hours a day, with certainly both shortwave transmitters, the low-powered, in inverted commas, a medium-wave transmitter, that was a 10-kilowatter as well, and, of course, the 1-kilowatt FM, with an occasional burst of the big 100-kilowatt, just to make sure that was still working. We did have a dummy load for that, by the way, but it was could only take, I think, about half the power that that beast had could churn out. Yes, you can imagine that ship was abuzz with RF when everything was going, and those poor DC generators had a hard time of it, I can tell you, because they'd had a few years wear in them by then. You should have seen that smoke pouring out when everything was running. So we didn't do that too often. I say we stayed there in Tripoli Harbour most of the time, but there was one very tense period. This was in about August, September of 77, when Libya and Egypt were quarrelling to the point where there were border skirmishes. And during that time, our Libyan masters, who of course worked through Herr Bollier and Herr Meister, told the ship's captain to get ready to sail to the area adjoining the coast of where Libya meets Egypt, from where, so the plan was, we were going to operate on the frequency of Cairo Radio, which was transmitting propaganda into Libya, anti-Libyan propaganda, and we were going to operate on that frequency. It's now coming back to me because we changed the frequency of our medium, of our 10-kilowatt transmitter, and shoot anti-Egyptian propaganda into Egypt. Well, there was a minor mutiny on board because that sounded dangerous, didn't it? Well, it didn't actually ever turn out.
But you did, in fact, in the end, set sail.
Yes, we did. We left Tripoli and we went to Benghazi and we stayed there a fair length of time. But from Benghazi, we went to Derna, a tiny port a little bit west of Tobruk from World War II, Desert Rats fame, etc., etc. But at no time did we shoot anything other than music out of our aerials.
Media Network, putting the bang into World Bang Radio.
At least that's what it sounds like in SSB.
This is Tim Hendel in Miami, Florida, USA. The frequency of 15.560 at midnight 30 UTC gives really excellent reception here in Florida. Last night on Media Network, you could at times have thought that you were listening to a medium wave station. The reception was so steady and there was no fading. Therefore, I'm really sorry that Radio Netherlands has chosen this frequency for the single sideband tests. For no matter how much this is called compatible single sideband, there always is a bit of distortion introduced. And since the reception on this frequency is so good and so steady, it seems a shame to spoil it.
Well, those compatible signal sideband tests will start on March 31st, as announced last week, and we'll just have to see if you can really hear the difference. Can you say that? Well, I just did. By the way, our Flevo transmitter site here in Holland is going through an engineering upgrade at present, which is why some frequencies have been missing at short notice, or suddenly breaking up, rather like that. Normal service will resume in the next few days. To West Africa now, and the first private radio station in Ivory Coast will officially begin broadcasting this coming Sunday, March the 24th. The station, Radio Espoir, or Radio Hope, started test transmissions in October of last year on the FM frequency of 102.8 MHz. The station's located in a suburb of Abidjan, the capital of Ivory Coast. Radio Espoir will be operated by a Catholic parish and will broadcast essentially religious programmes. The station also plans to rebroadcast programmes from Vatican Radio, so we contacted the head of Radio Espoir, Father Jean-Franco Bignon, and asked him how they're planning to pick up Vatican Radio's programmes.
We'll be getting a Vatican Radio cassette through the post every week with the Pope's homily and international church news. We will also record Vatican Radio's news at 1700 hours UTC off shortwave and rebroadcast it an hour or two later. The reception quality of Vatican Radio isn't always good, but it usually is.
Pas toujours, mais souvent.
Laudetur Jesus Christus, loué soit Jésus-Christ. Ici Radio Vatican.
And Radio Hope says it plans to be on the air for up to 10 hours a day over there in the Ivory Coast, and it's mainly run by young people. To Europe and Belgium, and the French Parliament announced on Tuesday that the Flemish language networks in that country would now operate under a new name. Instead of being called the Belgische Radio and Televisie, meaning Belgian Radio and TV, they're now called, dictionaries ready,
Nederlandse radio- en televisieuitzendingen in België, omroep van de Vlaamse gemeenschap.
Which means Dutch transmissions of the Belgian Radio and Television Corporation for the Flemish community, which they all shortened to
BRTN.
Some years back, the French-speaking community spent several million francs changing all the logos from RTB to RTBF, the F for French, of course. And now the BRT says it wants to add the letter N to let it compete better with the commercial cable-only channel called VTM. The Flemish government has promised to reduce its political influence on the network, but it won't allow advertising on the public service network on television, at least not yet. Soviet television authorities said on Sunday that they'd sacked three presenters on a popular news programme, which until the end of last week had managed to resist attempts by the Soviet government to censor independent news reporting. One of the dismissed presenters on the television news service programme was reprimanded earlier this year after reading an account of a military action against Baltic separatists and adding the line, "This is the only version we're allowed to give." Recognise that? Well, John Pettigrew in Liverpool was one of several callers on Monday to point out changes at Radio Vilnius again. The old interval signal and sign-on music is out, and this is the new theme introduced on Sunday night.
This is Radio Vilnius from the Independent Republic of Lithuania.
At 22:30 and 23 hours UTC, the only shortwave transmitter on Lithuanian soil is now using 9710 kHz instead of the former 6100 kHz. But still, the Soviet relay of Radio Vilnius at 23 hours on 11860 kHz gives the best reception here in Western Europe. Back to Andy of the World Radio TV Handbook, and you've got some satellite news, Andy.
Yes, over the next few days, Europe's newest direct broadcasting satellite, Astra 1B, will make its first test transmissions. Each of the 16 transponders will be tested randomly to make sure they're all performing according to spec, and by the end of April they should all be in regular service. Now, and this is the big news, WRTH has learned from several reliable sources that despite vehement denials from the London office of cable news network, CNN will be on the new Astra satellite. And that is going to come as a surprise to many industry observers in Europe who've been led to believe that CNN had no interest in the direct-to-home market.
What about the rumours in the trade press that another channel, Eurosport, is going to disappear from the Astra satellite?
Well, we've been checking into those rumours, and we've learned that despite the decision of Rupert Murdoch's News International to withdraw financial backing from the Eurosport project, the channel will definitely continue, but it will move from the existing Astra satellite to Astra 1B. That's because its current transponder will be taken over by News International's own Sky Sports channel. The future of Eurosport's parallel feed on Eutelsat 2 F1 is unclear, however.
Some stations talk to the world. Radio Netherlands talks to people.
Eric Beauchemin is next with this media report. Eric.
There's been unrest for over a month now on the French island of Réunion in the Indian Ocean because of the French government's decision to close down a popular pirate television station, Telefreedom. The DOM in Telefreedom stands for Département d'Outre-mer, or Overseas Department. Telefreedom had been on the air for over 5 years, despite its illegal status, broadcasting a mixture of films, news, cartoons, and music programs. Telefreedom's status as being independent of the French government earned it a loyal following among the poor Creole majority of the island, who rallied around the TV channel to press for better pay and living conditions. And not surprisingly, perhaps, there was a storm of protests when the French authorities decided to close down the TV channel, as the director of Telefreedom, Camille Soudre, now explains.
They confiscated our transmitters on February the 24th in the early hours of the morning. Police moved in at the orders of the French Justice Minister and the Prime Minister. We were taken off the air and they impounded all our equipment. We've tried to recover the transmitters, but the case is still before the courts. The population of Réunion strongly protested against the government's action. At least 9 people were killed and the protests continue. The government has refused to start any type of dialogue with us and is strongly suppressing the young people of this country.
And there was renewed violence this past weekend during a brief visit by French Prime Minister Michel Rocard in Réunion. According to Camille Soudre, the only reason the authorities gave for closing down the TV channel was that Telefreedom allowed the people of Réunion to speak freely. Monique Auger-Lafont of France's media watchdog commission, the CSA, was surprised to hear that version of events.
That's totally false. We objected to the fact that he was operating a pirate TV station and illegally broadcasting the programs of other TV stations. Telefreedom didn't pay the broadcasting rights for films or other programs. Mr. Soudre never abided by French law, and we received numerous complaints from directors, producers, singers, and others.
Up until very recently, RFO, the government-run broadcasting organization for all French overseas departments and territories, was the only broadcaster in Réunion. It was seen by some local inhabitants, like Camille Soudre, as a type of neo-colonialist broadcaster, because it didn't give them airtime. But the president of RFO, François Giquel, disagrees.
I don't want to get involved in a controversy with Mr. Camille Soudre, because I've never met him. I will say this, though. We have 2 television channels in Réunion, and Channel 1 provides, on average, 1.5 hours a day of locally produced programs, such as news, current affairs, and talk shows in which the inhabitants of the island can take part. So quite a bit of our programming is locally produced. In fact, much more so than any other television station, legal or illegal, in Réunion.
The liberalization of French airwaves has also affected France's overseas territories and departments. Last Monday, the first private TV station began broadcasting in Réunion. So we asked Mr. Giquel how he felt about the disappearance of RFO's monopoly in Réunion.
I abide by the law, and as president of RFO, I have never said that I wanted us to keep our monopoly. I'm the first to admit that we can't meet all the needs with only 2 TV channels.
Nonetheless, Camille Soudre, who also operates a legal FM radio station on the island, takes a less benevolent view of the French government's actions.
The authorities have again threatened to close down our radio station. We stopped broadcasts on Sunday in protest against the government's policy and against the closure of the television station. The situation's very tense, I'd even say on the brink of chaos. I think what's happening is very, very serious. It's unbelievable that a Western country like France could do something like this in one of its territories on the other side of the globe, because it certainly wouldn't and couldn't do this in France. It is, beyond a shadow of a doubt, a human rights violation, and we plan to take the case of Telefreedom to the European Court of Justice.
Finally, on a personal note, my thanks to George Wood of Radio Sweden and several callers who phoned the answer line with their good wishes. Last Thursday evening, the Marx family was blessed with a new arrival, Vivian Felicity. Mother and daughter are doing well. We'll all be back in business next week at the same time. Join us then. Bye now.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.